is the most dangerous place in the world for all of us. And that's why I told your sisters to stay put.
You really think they will?
Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider. This is our Haunting of Hill House spoiler cast episode. We are dropping this exactly 1 month from the launch of The Haunting of Hill House. So if you're wondering why so late, well, not everybody can watch 10 episodes like 3 days after the show comes out. We had to put it all together. We finally have. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey guys, how you all doing?
We're all excited, Stellar. John.
I wish we had ghost voices in the background. All right, Amanda Sink.
Boo.
Your whole thing is hello, hello, so you should say boo, boo.
Like boob, boob? That's kind of what it sounds like.
Nobody even thought boob. Except,
that's what it sounds like
except
to me.
You.
That's hello, hello.
No, it's too late. It was boo, boo. No. Like boo, boo,
boo. Boo. This is a lame introduction.
We should probably start the whole thing over.
I think we probably should.
All right, so what we're going to talk about this episode is Hill House. We're going to talk about the show itself. Season one, it's an all-encompassing story. The story is told from start to finish in season one, so we're going to talk about that. We're going to break it down by character, each of the characters of the Crane family, including the house, because we consider that a character of the story. We're kind of going to break down what happens to them throughout the 10 episodes and what we thought of the actor, the character, whatever, and their journey on the show. You know, this is a show that people have been raving about for the last month since it came out. And I know some people are probably listening to this going, why would you do it after Halloween? Well, scary is good anytime. If you haven't watched the show yet, please go do it. We're going to get heavy into spoilers. Don't listen much further unless you want to know exactly everything that happens. And there's a lot of cool stuff that happens that you don't want to be spoiled for you. So there you go. I'm going to stop talking about it. I'm just going to get into it. Here's a quick rundown of the show as it happened, created by Mike Flanagan, who directed great movies called Hush, Gerald's Game, both for Netflix, too. So check those out. If you have Netflix, you can check them both out. The Haunting of Hill House follows the five Crane siblings who spent a summer in Hill House as their mother and father planned to fix up the old house to resell it and make a huge profit. The local caretakers, the Dudleys, help with this task, but they won't be there after dark, as well as fill our family in on exactly what is going on in this creepy-ass house. Time is very non-linear, as our modern-day siblings grapple with the death of their sister Nell, while flashbacks fill in the gaps as to what happened the fateful night their mother killed herself in the same house. Yeah, that's disturbing. And I want to know, before we get into the characters and everything, what were your first reactions? How did you hear about the show? Because I'm finding a lot of people that learned of the show by word of mouth. How did you come to it, and what did you think once you watched it?
I've followed Jeff Howard, who is one of the writers of the show, on Twitter for a while now, for a couple of years or something. And he had started a post about The Haunting of Hill House, and it started to intrigue me because I didn't know anything about the novel. Or
you were trying to get an interview with him at one point, right?
I was. Yeah, he said he was down for it. I don't know what happened.
And then never replied?
Yeah.
Come on, Jeff, what's up?
Yeah, Jeff. So, I started to see that, and I got a little interested on what he was posting about, what kind of work he was doing, because he's worked on a lot of different projects that in the horror realm that intrigued me. So I was curious what's coming up next. And so I started to follow it a little early on. And once I started to hear all of the huge, like, word of mouth vibes, good vibes on it, after it's release through net partners, people must be able to screen through Netflix. So I started to hear all the great things about it, and I was like, man, this is really turning out to be something spectacular to look forward to. So as soon as it released, I watched the first episode, really got into the first episode, was really digging it, and then just life kind of, and the Halloween holiday kind of caught up with me, so I didn't get to finish it for a couple weeks. But man, it was just spectacular. I was blown away by how much I loved it and how much work and thought went into the creative process.
Would you say spooktacular?
Spooktacular. I like that.
Yeah?
No.
Yeah.
John,
hey, party pooper.
Wow, wow, wow.
What about you, Scrooge McDuck?
Wow, wow, wow.
It's so, I wish I'd have like that big tower of money diving into it all the time.
All man. Take baths. We can in all a pool of money.
Or just take the money and go home.
I would take a bath in it. If I had that kind of cash, I would. Yeah.
So I learned about this during show research, you know, getting everything ready for the Hollywood Outsider proper. And
oh, really?
I learned about different things. It was something that was coming out and it was just different articles covering Mike Flanagan. And I tell anyone who has a chance, I get a chance to, if they like horror or like scary things, they need to watch Hush because I think it's very smartly done horror. And I sort of like Oculus. He's also known for that. I mean, I say sort of only because I had a weird experience seeing it in the theater, but...
Oh, well, you can't start there and then tell us. What was the weird experience that you had?
Did you see a ghost?
One thing that was driving me nuts about that movie, and it wasn't really the movie itself, my wife doesn't like watching a lot of horror. So when she said she wanted to go see Oculus, I was excited because I finally got to go see a horror movie in the theater. And there was a guy sitting directly behind me who had to meticulously and very loudly unwrap, I guess, Jolly Ranchers or some shit like that.
Okay.
And they'll throughout the entire movie. So it's like crinkle, crinkle, crinkle. And I'm thinking to myself, great. I finally get to watch a horror movie with my wife. And this guy is going to ruin every bit of this horror movie for her because she can hear the crinkle and it's going to make her crazy. And it turns out she didn't even know what the hell I was talking about. When I was like, oh, man, that sucks. The whole crinkling thing. She's like, what crinkling thing? So I was distracted by that. But from what I saw of the movie, it was great.
Okay. I'm almost sorry I asked. All right. What's the rest of your story?
Again, I was watching with my wife, so she insisted on watching it piecemeal. We had to watch only an episode or two a night, and it took us a while to get through it. And I actually appreciated the fact that I had to take my time with it. I had to sit with the episodes we saw that night. And I loved everything I saw. The art direction is just amazing, to the point that you get so used to like these big wide open shots that almost always mean something. And some of them don't mean anything, but they're there to create tension because you know something's going to be happening. And they have moments where on the walls, the lights are creating faces. And if you see it, it makes it all the more eerie and scary. And it's just so beautifully done. I loved every minute of it. And the scares got to me, and I enjoyed the heart pounding moments that it created, and it was just magic on screen. I really loved it.
So I'm a huge Mike Flanagan fan. I have been for a long time. He's honestly my go-to horror director these days. He's the only reason I watched Gerald's Game, because even though I do like that book, I could not see a way for it to translate well to a film. And it did. It ended up being a really damn good movie. Hush is one of those movies where it just came out of nowhere and was great, shocked me. So I saw his name was attached, and that's what got me interested. And I remember Amanda mentioning, because of Jeff Howard, that he was involved in the project in some way, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I knew about it. We talked about it on the show, and then you started getting feedback a little bit about it. People were excited about it, but I'll be honest, I wasn't. The only thing I was interested in was Mike Flanagan's name. I don't, and Kate Siegel, because she was a star of Hush, mm-hmm. and I think she's a really great actress. I don't care if she's married to the director or whatever. She's a good actress in her own right. I hope she succeeds in the future. The reason why I was hesitant is it's a ghost story. I don't like ghost stories. I'm not somebody who's scared of ghosts. I don't get creeped out by ghosts. I get bored by ghosts. I just sit there and go, that's usually how I feel about ghost stories.
Excellent sound effect.
Thank you. Very rarely do I, and you guys know this. I mean, people listening, you know this. I've talked about it on the show. Ghosts don't scare me. As soon as I watch a ghost movie, the first thing I think is, why haven't you left yet? Why are you still in the house? I don't understand why you're there. Well, this one, once I started hearing the rave reviews, I'm like, all right, I will give it a chance. I will give it a chance, even though I don't like these stories. But 10 episodes of people stuck in a haunted house is going to be really hard to sell me, because why are you still there? What the hell are you doing in this house? They had a plan for that. I have to feel after watching it that they had a plan for people like me, mm-hmm. because it really, really feels like they did. Like they had a way to keep people there for the time that they had people there, and it worked. It made sense. So by the end of it, I was totally enraptured. It was visually stunning. for a television show on whatever channel, Netflix or anything else, it's visually stunning. There were a couple bold chances in it. There were a couple reasonable scares in every episode. Episode six, if you're someone who's a fan of filmmaking, is just beautiful to behold.
Astonishing.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that later on in the podcast. But ultimately, it was what really stuck with me isn't the scares. It isn't the ghosts. It's the tale of family.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is dealing with grief and how we struggle with the past. And there's a lot of those motifs going on and themes going on throughout the series that really worked well for me. And if you're a fan of family, it worked. And the fact that it ends with a happy ending was fantastic. So many shows like this in today's days always have to have that dark, dour ending. And I know there was an alternate ending, which I'll talk about later on too. But I'm glad they didn't go with it. I'm glad they went with the happier ending. Like that final episode, I thought was going to be all horror and nightmares, and it ended up being actually a very sweet episode. So
the whole, of the storytelling was incredibly done, because when you first get into it, the first episode, you kind of sit with it like, oh, this is a ghost story. This is just going to be about a ghost story.
Yeah, I was really confused the first episode too. I'm like, what the hell where are we at? Why is this like Pulp Fiction? I don't know where the hell I'm at. When's Christopher Walken showing up with a watch?
And as the season progresses, you start to realize that this is not really, I mean, it is about ghosts. The ghosts are present, but that's not what the story focuses on. That's just an element to be added into a story of, as you said, family and heart. It had so much heart to it, but it also had those moments that legitimately scared me, which never happens. Ghost stories are the one things that can get me a little riled up. But this one, I actually jumped in my chair, and I genuinely can't remember a single time where I've physically moved out of my seat, because I was so entangled in the story that I was trying to understand, okay, what are they trying to tell me? What information am I about to get? And then all of a sudden, this is the scene where they're driving down the road, and all of a sudden, there's just a ghost in between the two of them that, and then the car flips and goes over. And I was like, holy shit. I seriously moved out of my seat. I was so – I turned off the TV after that episode, and I said, I'm going to sleep because I'm a little messed up today.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch these during the daylight.
That'll get you.
Yeah.
There were a lot of really cool nods too, which some people might not have realized. There are hidden ghosts throughout the entire series. I don't know if did you guys notice that as you watched it or just afterward on YouTube and whatnot?
My favorite one when I noticed it was the statues moving. When she's moving down the hallway, the statue's looking one direction, and then she moves down the other way, the statue's looking the opposite direction, and I'm not the only one who caught it, but we actually rewound the scene several different times, because when I caught it, I was like, oh my God, the statue. And my wife was just like, what are you talking about? I'm like, no, look, watch the statues. And we rewound it, and it added a level of just freakiness to the whole thing.
Yeah, it was really cool. And then as you watch it, people, if you don't know this, go back and rewatch it. You caught them on YouTube. Where'd you catch them, Amanda?
I saw it in an article that was pointing out all of the ghosts that were hidden. I think part of it for me, which I am really glad that I missed it, was that I was so engaged in what the story was telling me that I didn't need to focus on all of the other creepy parts. Like, I think that actually worked to their benefit, that when I did maybe notice one or two ghosts, it took me by surprise because I didn't notice all of the other ones. It wasn't like a continuous thing like, oh, every episode there's ghosts that are just randomly hidden, which is what they did.
Yeah, they planted people in ghost suits and stuff throughout the episodes. They're not even part of the episode, but they're there.
Yep.
And I caught them a couple times. And when I did, I'm like, what?
Yeah, you could just see like a slight face or something.
Yep. And you think you're hearing things or seeing things, and there it is. When you go back and look again, you're like, there it is. Oh, very cool. So let's go ahead and break it down by character. And we're going to start with, I would say, the leader of the pack.
She's but definitely
we're not the going in any order here, so I don't always say, why don't you start with the oldest? Because we didn't want to. So we're going to start with Shirley.
So Shirley, who is played by, because we have the older and younger, so we have Elizabeth Reaser and Lulu Wilson. Shirley is the eldest, and she is also the most hardened of the Crane family. She runs a funeral home, which I think you have to have a certain level of strength to be able to handle that every day in and out. But she runs this business with her husband, Kevin, and allows her sister to live with her for free, which is super nice of her. But she's kind of like the mother figure of the family after their mother has passed away, constantly worrying about everyone and trying to take care of them. Also seems to be a little bit strict on things. And her, I feel like she doesn't have the biggest character arc, except for the reveals that she ends up finding out that she was so determined to not accept any of the money from her brother, and then she finds out that her husband had been accepting it and was helping keep them afloat because she had such a genuine good heart that working in this business that she wanted to try to help people who are experiencing a loss, not having to spend all of this money at a funeral home, which is her livelihood. Mm-hmm. And her husband's like, how can we sustain a business if you're just giving everything marked down on price?
I see both of their points of view, and I don't agree with hers, but I see it.
Yeah.
I'll take that money.
So she had a turning point because she always seemed to be the one who was like, I do the right thing all the time. So don't come at me and tell me anything because I'm always the one who's doing the best here. And then it really flips her around when she finds out, oh, my livelihood has been here because my husband's been accepting this money that I was so determined not to accept out of, you know, pride. She really was the leader of the pack in terms of the siblings.
One of the most important story points that you're missing is the fact that the reason why she is as stringent and as stern and as controlling as she is because I feel like in a lot of ways, not only is she dealing with what happened to their family, but she's also trying to make up for the fact that she cheated on her husband.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Which is good because, you know, by the end, you're like, oh, you hypocrite.
Yeah. She is a little bit of a hypocrite.
Very judgy. And you just feel bad the whole time. She feels bad the whole time.
Right.
Yeah. That is a sad aspect. I can't believe I forgot to say that.
I mean, come on. It's just one night. It's all good.
Yeah. And it's a different zip codes don't count, right?
Exactly. She was out of town. If you're out of state, it doesn't matter. Isn't that how it works?
I went to Vegas a couple weeks ago. I'm just saying.
What happens in the airport lobby, stays in the airport lobby. Although I don't know why it would be in the airport lobby. I mean, in a hotel lobby, but it makes more sense, probably.
It's incredible how much guilt she held for that, though, because if you notice, that was the one, it wasn't like her family, like a lot of them experienced with their family, or it was their mother's suicide that continued to kind of put weight on their shoulders. And for her, it was this very minor affair that she had.
And she felt guilty.
And that it was so, that guilt that she experienced was so heavy that it overruled, a lot of times, I feel like overruled the weight of her mother's passing.
Well, I'm glad that that was there at the end because as the show went on, I kept liking her less and less and less and less. And I'm like, you're the one sibling. I'm fine if Nell comes and picks you off at this point because you're driving me crazy. Right. She's such a control freak and, you know, rude to everybody. I mean,
sanctimonious.
Yeah. Full of herself and pompous. And Steven isn't really doing anything wrong. So he's a writer. He wrote the story and he changed some things. And you're just kind of being an ass to him about him finally succeeding at what he does and using the family for actually some good in somebody's life. I just don't see that as a negative. And she just found the negative in everything. Come to find out, it was really just her putting her own pain onto everybody else. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a large part of it is the way I saw it. She's an interesting character throughout. Anything else on Shirley?
Not too much. I don't feel like she was the prime sibling character to focus on.
So you feel like Shirley wasn't as powerful a character as she could have been, or she wasn't really prominent until near the end?
I think she served her purpose enough. I mean, she was there to serve as a mother figure. Like, she was the mom they needed after they lost their own. And she kind of was, even as a child too. She was constantly having to watch out for everyone and do everything, and that obviously takes a weight on people too. But she just wasn't one of those characters that overwhelmed me. I think, as you said, it's really hard to like her for the majority of the entire show.
I mean,
I respect some of her choices.
Yeah, I respect her, but I
like her the way she constantly helped her brother in some aspects, and in other aspects, she also shunned him from the family. Mm-hmm. So it was more just kind of like, we're going to push you to the side. Oh man, that moment
where she kicks Luke out of her Nell's wedding.
Yeah.
That was a horrible thing, I think.
Yeah.
She felt horrible for that too.
Yeah, that was terrible. And not only that, but then she let Nell believe that Luke didn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
Which is horrible. I mean, and that was one of the things that she mentioned, that her day would have been perfect, but she just really wished that Luke would have been there.
Yep, she ruined her perfect day.
Yeah.
No, you don't know everything, Shirley. All right, now we're going to move on to Theo. Kate Siegel stars as Theo and McKenna Grace as young Theo. We see Theo growing up in the house and realizing she is sensitive, as Mom calls it. Throughout her 10 episodes, we see that her touch allows her to sense the past of an object or a person, often vividly reliving memories or tragedies. And even as she gets older, or as she's older, she's working as a psychiatrist. Man. And she puts that to use to find out the smiling man. That was a really hard episode to watch. That was hard. That was hard. Theo lives with Shirley, we come to find out, to be closer to her sister, struggles with intimacy quite a bit as she finds a new possible mate. She finds a woman that's interested in her. We find out that she didn't really come out to her family so much as they found out that she is gay, and is the first to realize that Nell didn't kill herself after she touches Nell's body, you know, and learns things that way. I want to go back, and before we get really into, I just want to talk about that one episode where, I think it was episode 3, because every, you know, the first couple episodes is each of their particular stories, and she learns of that young girl's being molested, and you have that scene in the basement. That was just a hard scene to watch, where she has that moment of realization as she's mimicking a child being raped. That was just hard to watch.
It was heart-wrenching, for sure.
As soon as she got near the couch, like she was walking towards it, I was like, this is where it all went down. This is, some bad stuff has been going down on this couch. And then she sat down on the couch, and I was like, oh God, she's going to feel it, and she's going to know what's happening. I did not expect it to act like through her. And then when she laid down and fully let it engulf her, and her whole being is now in this past experience, and then you see her look at the ceiling and you're like, oh God, that's where it comes from. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, man, talk about traumatizing, not just for that child, but for Theo herself to constantly have to endure those emotions.
Yeah, and it affected her to the point where she saw Mr. Smiley in her house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ugh, that was just sad. So any other thoughts on Theo? This is an interesting character.
I'm going to echo what a lot of people said. Theo was probably my favorite character. She, as far as like having the sensitive touch thing, made her very interesting, cool to watch. And then beyond that, she served as someone, like, she was the consummate middle child. She... I identify with that so much. She was not old. You know, she kind of walked both lanes, whereas the older kids didn't feel everything the youngest kids did or see the things that the youngest kids did. She kind of was riding that line where not only did she not see it, but she knew it was there. So it was interesting seeing her bridge that void between the youngest siblings and the oldest ones. It's something that every middle child has to do. And I felt so much for her story. I loved the actress and what she was doing. And she was great. She was by far my favorite character.
She was also my favorite character. And for all the things that John's already mentioned, but also because I love the way they approached her initially and how she transformed when her walls started to come down. Because when you first see her and you see these gloves and that she just seems very isolated with people. She doesn't really want to talk much. She doesn't really want to do much. She just has her own intentions. And then when those are fulfilled, that's it. We're done.
Get out.
Conversation over. And as we start to learn more about her, so at this time, you're now thinking, wow, she's obviously got some stuff that she has not dealt with. And you think that it's just an emotional baggage sort of deal.
Yeah, I really thought she had a Smiley of her own kind of thing.
Yeah. And then as it starts to progress through the story, you realize she's not cold. She's not closed off from people. She just has to protect herself, because otherwise, I mean, I can't imagine having everyone's baggage on my plate just by shaking their hand or something. And so she constantly has to deal with that. And then she's using her power for the benefit of others, for good. And I love that aspect where she's trying to help other children deal with their own problems. And she took the money to better herself, where she's like, I'm getting my degree, man. Mm-hmm. I'm not I'm not paying for this out of pocket, and I'm definitely going to use this for myself, but also for other people. And I just loved every aspect of her character, and I thought she was the most intriguing in terms of reveal outside of Abigail.
Yeah, and the Dukes of Hazzard moment, you know, where how them Duke boys get out of this one, where her sister and her are having this fight because she came on to her husband or whatever, and she finally explained, because I'm like, there ain't no way they're getting out of this one. Like, how are you going to explain this? How did I accidentally almost make out with your husband? And then she had a really excellent explanation in her emotional breakdown. It actually worked for me. I was shocked because that shouldn't have worked at all.
Yeah.
But it did. She sold it. She sold it. Also, I want to point out...
Worked for me.
Yeah, right? It made sense. Young Theo, McKenna Grace, she was my favorite of the siblings.
Yes.
Of the young kids, too. She just so talented. Can act. Yeah. She can act. Was she an Itania, right?
She was an Itania.
Yeah, she's just a very talented actress, so it was nice seeing both roles. She's a very talented actress. I'm looking forward to seeing what she does after this. It's a cool character. All right. Is there anything else on Theo?
I think we covered her.
Do you think he's... going there, like now went there.
Like going to kill himself?
I don't know.
No. I guess I don't.
I'm not perfect, you know.
I know.
I'm really not. So go ahead, tell me. Try again.
Dad and I were in your office, and the Forever House was on the floor, and we heard a noise under the desk.
Not that. You already told me that.
I was really drunk.
I swear to God.
And the lights went out while we were down there, and I couldn't see. I was in the dark. I mean, like, I was in the dark that whole night, and I just needed... I couldn't see him, if that makes any sense.
You know what? Never mind.
I'm trying to tell you.
Forget I asked.
You just don't know what I'm dealing with.
We've all been dealing, and we somehow managed not to try to fuck each other's
spouses.
Hey,
that's not what this was about. It just isn't.
So, you were drunk, and that's supposed to be okay?
I'm telling you.
I don't even know why I let you come with me.
I touched Nell's body the night before.
The fuck is wrong with you?
Why don't you listen?
I don't know.
I'm telling you.
I don't.
I'm trying to tell you.
I don't need to hear your excuses.
I'm not making excuses.
Bullshit.
I saw.
All right. Steven is up.
All right. So Steven was portrayed by Michael, I believe it's pronounced Hussman, as an adult, and Paxton Singleton as a child. And he is the consummate big brother. He just wants to be able to do things like with his dad and help him out. But at the same time, he feels like he's boss kid. We watch as he struggles with their past, assuming that everything is a mental health issue with the family. He's a skeptic to the whole haunting thing, but he uses the family stories and some of his own memories to write finally his first successful book, and he becomes so wildly successful at it, he writes a string of books that deal with different hauntings. And he tries to use that money for good. He tries to share it with his family, and some people take it, some people don't. And ultimately, he, by the end of the story, he is now well aware of what's going on in the house, and he is the new guardian of that house.
He's also my weakest link, I'll be perfectly honest. As much as I really love this show, his performance, I thought, was kind of bland for a lot of it. Probably at least the first half. Maybe that's the way they were playing it. They were slow playing it. But I just was not engaged with that character until about halfway through. And it's not because he wasn't really doing anything. I just didn't find much there in terms of performance.
Yeah,
and I like him typically. I mean, I watched him on Game of Thrones. I thought he was a much better Dario. But it just... Steven, I mean, it could be the character too, because he's basically the boring one who didn't witness a lot of this stuff. So he's not really in on the ghost stuff until near the end. Now, by the end of the show, I was on board with Steven, but for the first half, I was not.
But I think that's part of the reason. I think you just explained why. It's because he is the skeptic, and he is the one who's not who's not sold on this whole thing of ghosts or anything else like that. And yet, even though you, Aaron, are normally not convinced that ghosts are possibly real or anything else like that, you are bought into this story and this idea. So you're looking at this guy going, what the hell's wrong with you? I'm bought. Why can't you be bought?
Could be. Could very well be.
I didn't like the way he treated his siblings. That's what I didn't like about his character. He seemed to be the one who felt that he was this successful author now, and that they, not necessarily that they owed him something, but that he certainly didn't owe them anything. I mean, he still shared his profits, so that's great that he shared his money and helped his siblings out. But beyond that, he didn't really seem to care if somebody was contacting him or needed him. It was always, I'll get to it when I get to it. I have other things that I'm worried
self-involved.
About. Yeah, and that's clearly obvious when it comes to the fact that he also had zero desire to tell his wife, knowing that he couldn't have children, knowing that she wanted to have children before they even got married, couldn't tell her, hey, sorry, this might not work out for us.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Just keep trying, right?
Yeah. Such a jerk move.
Yeah, it was a
and
jerk
then
move.
To then
I was joking, ladies. That was a jerk move.
The way he handled Nell when she came to his book reading or whatever it was.
Oh, it was horrible.
And
she was horrible too. They were both horrible in that moment.
She was very vocal with the way she was feeling.
She was pretty horrible too, Amanda. I mean, that was his livelihood. There was no place. That wasn't the place.
Sure, it's not the place, and she overreacted, but I certainly don't think that that makes his response okay.
I agree with that. But so, I'm just saying, you know, there's other ways. He wasn't receptive to other people.
I think I give her a pass too, because she was already pretty messed up. Like, she already had all of these things going on, and not that anybody was – he wasn't there for her. He should have known that this isn't normally how my sister reacts, so what's going on with my sister? And also, when somebody calls him, he doesn't care.
I'm going to have to disagree with you, because if my sister showed up at my place of work and started tanking everything I was doing, I would have some highly terse words with her. Not that he said anything great or nice, but I get it. I wouldn't hit her, but I would shake the shit out of her.
The old Chris Rock joke.
Yeah. I mean, this is like, you can't do that, especially somebody who's taking the money that you're making for the family, which Nell was. So she's going to start showing up and tanking everything because, you know, why? Because she's having a mental breakdown. That's his point of view. Nothing about what's going on in the family was something where it was something that was happening to them or something that was they were being affected by outside forces. No, his whole point of view was, hey, we are all broken people because genetics screwed us. And so because genetics screwed us, I'm not having a kid. I get it. I understand where he's coming from because that's his train of thought. People do that all the time. His sister losing her mind right there in front of everybody and tanking everything for him, where he feels like he's more in control, where he's seeing somebody who's completely just unhinged. I'm okay with him yelling at her. I get it. They're terrible. They're both being terrible, but that's the show. Everybody's self-absorbed in the beginning.
I would say he was a lousy big brother. I do think that. On the same token, if you try to look at it from his perspective, nobody supported him. Nobody. The entire family. Some of them took the money. Some of them didn't take the money. But nobody really supported him and said, hey, great job on that book. Great job. You know, everybody's expecting him to do all this stuff because he's the big brother, but he writes a story. He turns a tragedy into a success. He's proud of it. He makes a career on it, and nobody does anything except basically punish him for it. I mean, there's something to be said for that too. I mean, nobody's really looking at it from Steven's point of view. That would alienate me from my siblings too. Hey, I tried to make something work in my life. I finally found a path to something I've always wanted my whole life, and turning this nightmare we've lived into a positive. And all I get is grief from you guys. Even from the ones that took my money, you still give me grief on it. Because he didn't have to give them a cut of it. You know, he did that because he was trying to be a good brother. He always came from the spot of responsibility. Even if he did feel alienated and he did become selfish, I see sometimes where he was coming from.
I think he alienated himself by consistently dismissing how everybody else was feeling.
Because he didn't believe in ghosts.
He didn't want to because he wanted to have a logical reason for his mother's death.
But that's rational. That's rational great, thinking. But
that's still just, him alienating.
I feel like because we're on the side of the people who know that there's ghosts there, we see him as kind of being the asshole. Where if you take a step out and if you like walked into this real life situation where four of five siblings are yelling about ghosts and then one guy's like, there's no freaking ghosts. He's the sensible one in that scenario. He might think his whole family is wacko at this point.
And that's exactly what he thinks. It's not until the moment where Hugh explains to him and says, I read your book. You saw a ghost. And he's like, no, I didn't. He's like, no, this point in the book, when you saw the watch repairman, I didn't have anybody repairing that clock. You can tell because of the different things. And I wasn't going to spend the kind of money it was going to take to fix that clock. So you saw an old-timey guy in overalls and a mustache. That guy was never in the house. You saw a ghost. And that's actually even just reliving that moment in the whole movie. You know, the whole show is like making the hairs in the back of my neck stand up. But that moment right there is the moment in which Steven changes. His whole perspective just gets shifted to the left. And he's like, oh, my God. That was his redeeming moment.
The thing that bothers me most about him. So, okay, let's say that we're accepting of his perspective that Aaron's talked about where he's been alienated. He was trying to find a rational, logical reason.
We don't have to say. I'm actually accepting of that.
But let's say that we're going all through that path and we look at it from his perspective. Looking from his siblings, you're going to tell me my entire life, everything that I'm feeling and talking to you about is not right, is wrong, and that I'm making things up. But then you're going to go make a profit off of it on the flip side and saying that you do believe in it, that you had that experience yourself. So you're going to dismiss everything I've ever said to you as your sibling, but then you're going to go make money off of it. That is what bothers me about his character.
I get that. Well, but they also took them. Several of them took
the
money.
Well, I understand they took the money. And at that point, that's your choice. But I still understand alienating him when when they read the book.
Like really, Shirley's the only one that took the high ground and kept it. Everybody else, you know, they're willing to take that money.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The thing is that this wasn't even like his first attempt at writing a book wasn't The Haunting of Hill House. They tell you throughout this thing that he was a failing writer. He couldn't get anything to sell. So the one thing he was finally able to sell and he built a career off of was ghosts. So why not? I really as somebody who would love to make more money off of what I do creatively, I get it. I would freaking whore out any of my any sort of story I could if I can make money off of the things I love to do creatively. I'm on his side for him to be good for him. Way to go, man. Pat you on the back. And he offered to share it with his family. Guess what? I wouldn't share the money I was making off of my family tragedy. I'm not even being a dick. I'm like, you know what? Why don't you guys go figure out how you're going to make some money off of that too? I'm okay.
Yep. I'm kind of with him on that. Let me move on to the next one, Luke.
Luke is a very sweet and tender character who's gone through a lot of different things. Played by Oliver Jackson Cohen and Julian Hilliard. That's probably not said properly, but that's okay. Luke is one of the twins and falls prey to a life of addiction, which is really sad to watch him continue to go through. He was traumatized as a child when he went down the dumbwaiter and saw a corpse crawling towards him.
That was freaky.
Super creepy. Ripped off a piece of his shirt. And then, of course, nobody's still going to believe him. And was never believed, except for Theo. Aw, so sweet. Mm-hmm. And he found friendship with what everyone assumed to be an imaginary friend, Abigail, but whom we find out later was actually the Dudley's child, and she was real all along.
How? That was horrifying, by the way.
That she was real, and then yeah, she was a ghost?
That one got me the whole time, because I thought she was a ghost.
I was like, wait a second. And then I was like, no, it still does make sense.
And I'm like, why is the ghost laying dead on the floor? And then they came in and like, oh, it's real. What? Oh, my God, the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
It was really... They had a lot of really good twists in this.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, the tall hat man that's been following Luke around also traumatized him.
Screw that, dude.
He was around all the time. And then that moment, oh my God, it horrifying. When he's walking down the street And he's by himself, and it's, like, dark outside, and the tall hat man is right behind him.
I'm shivering a little bit.
I know. I'm, like, looking behind me, too. Is it behind me? And so he keeps going, and then it just gets right next to him, and then he turns around. Oh, man, it freaks me out. So he has all of these events going on. Shirley, as likable and unlikable as she can be, she actually paid for his rehabilitation, and yet he continued to spiral to the very, very end, we find.
Well, he can never escape his demons, figuratively and literally.
And literally.
Here's the one question I have, and this applies to both Luke and Nell, because the same thing happens to Nell's. Why are these things following them outside of the house, but they don't seem to follow anyone else outside the house? Why those two? I know they said that they are more sensitive, but that doesn't explain why the ghost would follow them. Is it just because they can still get to them and they want to bring them back to the house? Is that why? So they can feed? Is that the whole point?
Yeah, that's the whole point. Like, it seems like they were trying to lay some grounds that Luke and Nell, because they were the youngest, fed on the most by the house, and the house was the most interested in getting them back.
Okay, and that's why Nell came back to the house, because she finally broke once she realized.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Well, Nell was super traumatized by, well, and time
is, well, we'll talk about Nell
really
in a minute,
messed so, up yeah. too in this house. So the two of them were, they, as John said, they were impacted, I would say, the most by all of the ghosts that were inside the house. And I think that the way they dealt with their trauma inside the house made them, I don't want to say weaker when they left, but they never really dealt with it.
They were traumatized, where the other ones are more traumatized by the mom dying.
Yeah.
Those two were traumatized because of what happened to them.
So maybe the fact that they were so susceptible to the ghosts and actually physically right there with them, maybe that allowed them to follow. I don't know. I really don't.
It's messed up.
Well, you have to remember the last things that Olivia was doing before she died, or before she was murdered, or whatever you want to put it. The last thing she was doing was trying to protect Luke and Nell. She was trying to, like, well, you know, help them wake up. So as Olivia technically being the last person to die in the house before we get to Luke and Nell as their adults, that's the motivation of the house. That's the motivation of why the ghosts are still going after them. It's because of the power in the death of Olivia and what her final thoughts were before she died. If you really want to delve into it, that's why it affected them the most as adults and went after them even further than it did anybody else.
Well, because they were in the Red Room. They were the last living beings in the Red Room. Hmm. And the Red Room is really where all of the power is for that house.
That's where the house feeds.
Yeah. So at that point, and it's possible that Olivia could have maybe sent those ghosts to follow them to get them back home.
Because she was so lonely.
She just said that.
I know, I'm agreeing with you, but I was going to say next to that, the little porch light, like she was trying to get them home all along. So that proves, I think that kind of goes to your point, John.
I think that was the house, but it could be Olivia too, I suppose. I mean, either one. Kind of.
It's worked. All the same at this point.
The imprint left by her ghost could be wanting that. And that's why it affected them so much further when they left.
Yeah, Luke was a tragic character. I mean, the poor guy was coming out of it, and then he kept relapsing, and then, you know, but I get where they're coming from. I have friends that have been deeply involved in drugs, and they've gotten clean, and then they relapse, and it's kind of hard to support them after a while. You know, you try to be there, but after like the third or fourth time, you're like, I'm done. You know, I've done what I can to help you. You're on your own. At some point, you have to hit bottom to come out of it. It was an interesting dynamic to watch that, and how the house connected to his drug addiction, and he used the drugs to silence the ghosts that were constantly in his head. But they weren't fake. So is it an excuse for the drug addiction? I don't know, but it's just how he dealt with his trauma.
I have a question about his death, because when he gets
the Luke?
So he has that moment where he's with his girlfriend lady. Mm-hmm. And then she's talking about like, just shoot up with me. And he's like, no, I can't. And then she's like, but you already did. But we don't ever see him make the action of actually putting the needle in his arm. But he's in the Red Room at this point. So did a ghost do it for him?
No, the ghost made him do it to himself.
But without him even realizing it?
And it was rat poison, not heroin.
Yeah, it was rat poison. So technically it doesn't count.
Okay. But I felt like that's something that we would have seen, like his hands at least move.
No. I think it was the ghost. The house was manipulating him to do it to himself. If he dies, the house feeds on one more soul.
I understand that. But when Nell dies, we see that happen. Mm-hmm. When Hugh dies, we see the actual actions of
these
people.
That's just how they shot
it,
because they didn't want to tip their hat yet to what was going on.
No. Right. Well, with Nell, we didn't see Nell put the necklace on. Well, put the rope around her neck. What we saw was Olivia giving her the necklace, and then all of a sudden we realized the necklace is actually the rope.
Right, but we saw that. We saw her holding the rope.
It's just a matter of how it was shot. It was implied that he did it to himself.
Right.
I thought it was implied.
I mean, I understood that that's where it was coming from. I was just like, did the ghosts actually inject him, or did they make him do it?
He did it to himself because he was under their influence. Just like Nell put the rope around her own neck, just like her mom plunged to her death. They did it to themselves, but the house influenced them.
Yeah. The only reason I question that is because when Olivia went over, when she jumped or whatever, she was actually pushed. Like the ghost pushed her arm, and that's when she went forward.
Influenced.
So right.
Same thing.
Yeah. Same thing, but different than what we're saying.
Yeah. Same theory. Just different. Said a different way.
All right.
The ghost made them kill themselves.
You know, right. Like you saw the ghost push her. You saw Olivia give the necklace, even though it wasn't really a necklace. It was rope. Mm-hmm. But you already did it to yourself. Oh my God, there's a needle in my arm. It's all stuff the house influenced them to do. Hugh falling over when he gets touched by the house, and it's like he turns all black, but he just has a moment and he passes out. So it's all things just influenced by the house.
Okie dokie.
All right, moving on to Nell. Oh, this is the worst one. Victoria Pedretti stars as Nell, and also Violet McGraw plays her as a child. We see Nell in the first episode struggling. Something is haunting her. And also, I would say, hunting her. By the end of that first episode, we come to find out that she's actually dead and is appearing to Steven. And it's a great moment if Netflix didn't send out 1,000 GIFs of her zombie face to ruin it, unfortunately.
Oh, I didn't see those.
Didn't see it.
I did. I was so mad. So mad. I saw that entire moment coming because Netflix sent out a cool GIF where she, yeah. But
oh, her mouth where she's like, ah.
Yeah, at the end of the episode where she's like, ah. As we follow her journey through 10 episodes, we learn that Nell is Luke's twin sister and was horrifically haunted by the bent neck lady. I get chills just thinking about this one. While she lived in the house. And that apparition hounded her outside of the house as well. Now, I mean, she even gets married. Her husband dies suddenly. She blames the bent neck lady, but it turns out it really wasn't that. It was just a fluke accident. But because of her trauma, she tends to think that it was because of that. Nell goes back to the house where the spirits led her to kill herself, trapping her forever in the house. And as she dies, we learn that she was the bent neck lady the entire time. One of the best revelations in the entire 10 episodes. I was like, wait, what? And I think, you know, I guessed that by about the midpoint of this episode, but it was just one of those things where I'm like, maybe she's the bent neck lady. I mean, that would be kind of cool, wouldn't it? And then it happened. I'm like, wait, I didn't mean that. That was just a...
I take it back.
That was freaky. She's been tortured by herself. That's just horrific and just mind-blowing in a way. She somehow is able to reach out to her brothers and sisters. Apparently, their mother never left the house. And when they get trapped in the red room, she is able to wake them all up and save them. Her death ultimately saves their lives. Nell is a very tragic character, and now she is trapped in the house forever, but also she's a loving sister who just wanted peace. And in a way, she got that.
It's all confetti.
So now, what do you guys... Oh, it's all confetti. That was a beautiful moment. That was.
I really struggle with between her and Theo, like, being my favorites, because they both had different perspectives, and Nell was... She was so sweet and genuine, and when she wasn't a little zombie ghost with her mouth open, she was really adorable, too. And her, seriously, as you mentioned, the revelation, I had not guessed that at all.
Well, when I say guessed it, I mean it was like a fleeting thought.
And I never had the inkling that this could possibly, because I never thought about the time warping where it's was, I don't know, it was her future self always coming back to her past self.
And how they
self
shot and, it where it's like, foom, 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 foom.
Yeah.
And you see all
oh
the,
my God.
It was so awesome.
Here's how I heard it. I'm so stupid for not realizing this the whole time.
But it, and they did such a great job of not making you think that it was herself and never really showing that. And I, it was another one of those moments where I had to think back and say to myself, okay, there's no, they must have missed this somewhere, messed up somewhere where it's not possible this could really happen. Mm-hmm. And they really, they looped everything together really nicely. They tied their bow. And her character is just as tragic as her brother, as her twin.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Oh, but that
You know what made me saddest about her character is that throughout the entire series, she's begging for anyone to listen to her.
Yeah.
That's the irony, I think, of the whole show. And this is why I keep, when people ask me what kind of show is it, I say it's a family show. You know,
It's
in a lot of ways it is, because you have both of these characters, Nella and Luke, are desperately begging for help in different ways, and nobody is really listening to them. Nobody will listen to them. It's kind of a, it's an interesting way to say, hey, when your family needs help, try to open your ears a little bit, get yourself out of the way and listen, because you might be the one that can help them.
Also, her sleep paralysis.
What do you mean?
Oh, that sleep paralysis. The way they showed it was perfect and scary and oh my God. Her whole episode really just, it broke my heart. It really broke my heart in a way that I kind of enjoyed, just because I was like, wow, I'm really feeling something here. You know, I'm really feeling sorry for somebody who, in a way, would normally drive me nuts. But they did it in such a great way, because they just showed it an escalation as far as what was going on with her when they were revealing her story. But she is somebody who, as she got more and more into what was perceived as psychosis, that I started being like, all right, well, this is where I start going, yeah, I'm a little tired of this or what you're doing. But the more I realized what was actually happening to her, the more I was on her side. And yeah, like we talked about, that moment where, you know, she's foomp and we're in a different moment where she haunted herself. Like each time I leaned more and more forward going, I am just so hurt for her in her dying moments to realize that she was the one scaring herself her entire life.
Hmm.
Also, I don't think she ever fully believed what killed her husband. So my feeling is that she probably died.
She projected it in some way.
And she probably died still believing that it was her fault. Like, she probably did not accept that it was just, because I think it was like a brain aneurysm or something like that.
Something like that. I can't remember the exact terminology.
Yeah. And so, but she saw the bent neck lady at that moment when he, you know, when it happened. That's why he was in her sleep paralysis caused it. And so I still think that she died believing that it was her fault. And that's obviously it's not her fault, and it wasn't her fault ever at any point. Mm-hmm. But she just correlated it to that, because even if you take the bent neck lady out of it, if she wouldn't have had her sleep disorder, if he wouldn't have been helping her the whole time, he might not have gotten out of bed. He might not have had this happen to him. All of those different things. He was always so sweet and helpful to her, and they were an adorable couple. Oh, it was just so sad. Okay, I'm done.
That moment with Theo, when she's trying to get Theo to touch the spot where he died,
yeah,
was that was tough. That was hard. And just the fact that Theo was so pissed, too. I was on Theo's side for being pissed, but I still felt so sorry for Nell at that moment.
That was brutal. Because you knew what Theo was going to feel.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that was tough. All right. Hugh/Dad.
All right, so Hugh, who was betrayed by Henry/ET Thomas when during the young days of the whole family, and then Timothy Hutton/a perfectly acceptable old Henry Thomas.
Yeah, I was sold.
Remarkable casting going on.
Mm-hmm.
We follow Hugh as he starts to notice that his wife Olivia seems to be more and more affected by the house. His decisions as he tries to protect his children, as he wades through years of distrust, we see that he never really explained what was the thing that happened. We also get to the point where he decides that he's going to try to yet again protect his family by giving himself up. I understood him. I got him. I really felt for him as being somebody who wanted to protect his family and somebody who wanted to hide or what he perceived to be the truth about what happened to his wife, and he wanted to hide, keep his kids more or less safe from the house. I mean, I got it. I thought he was such a compelling character, and he was probably my second favorite character out of this whole story.
I think that the casting was exceptional as well. I had a hard time with his character in his younger character, just because it was very strange that, I don't know, you're not going to notice all of the changes with your wife and try to help her out sooner. And then when you do figure out something's wrong because she has a screwdriver to your throat, you're just going to make sure she goes to her aunt, her sister's house.
Yeah, that's an immediate you're going to your sister's house, by the way. That's not a next day delivery like 3 days kind of thing. Yeah, we're not
it's
talking
not Amazon
about
Prime.
You're out the door, babe. Sorry. That isn't you know what? Let's talk about why you got a screwdriver in my throat. Bitch! Why is there a screwdriver at my throat? Get out.
And it's nothing to do with the actors, because I thought they were both great, but there were just moments where his character had weird like you put your hand in the fan. Oh, well, it must not have been unplugged yet. Your kid, I mean, I know he's young, but he's not that young. He said, I unplugged it.
Hey, I would trust my kid, all right? And then I would beat his ass if that fan turned on. I'd be like,
and who doesn't go to the hospital for something like that? Like, he just bandaged it up, and she's like, oh, you're bleeding through it. And he's like, oh, guess I should re-bandage
it. Men in the
80s? Yeah, that's true.
Well, it's the 90s.
Oh, 90s, sorry, whatever. Either way, men, yeah, we're stubborn and stupid.
Yeah, it's the 90s. We don't have any proof that he didn't go to the hospital, and he could have popped the stitch at any given moment.
That's true. He could have went, and they just didn't show it.
I guess so. But he did it. He was so, as a father, loved, and his speech with his kids when they were in the funeral home, I loved that moment.
Which one? Because in the funeral home, there's a couple speeches going on.
Right, but when he first starts to just kind of finally tell them something, obviously the Hill House moment towards the end is the most eye-opening for him and with his family, but when he accepts so much of their blame constantly, and he doesn't ever throw blame or cast stones anywhere else. He just accepts it and then tries to give them just enough information that he feels that they need with protecting them and not giving them too much. And when he starts to explain to them, you know, these details that you guys think you know aren't what you think you know, to me it was moving, because I could see the fatherliness in him. And it was just very sweet.
And so basically he lost custody, right? That's what happened to the aunt, because he was talking about ghosts, and that's ultimately what happened. Or did he just, because he didn't just leave his kids. That's where I got a little confused, because they kind of glossed over.
I think he actually left his kids with his sister or her sister.
Yeah, I thought he dipped out because
I couldn't tell. Because I know that there's a talk about legal proceedings and he wasn't going to be charged or anything, but they're not going to bring my kids into it. I couldn't tell if that was a custody discussion or if that was a you're being charged with something discussion. It felt like that was a custody discussion.
That sounded more like the whole legal proceedings, yeah, as far as determining what happened to the wife, whether or not it was a murder or whether it was a suicide or whatever. So okay. That's where I got that from.
All right. Well, then that part of it I thought was really pathetic in a lot of ways. What's that? Murky. And also if he just left them because of this, I thought that was pretty horrible. I had a hard time with some of that, because as a dad, I can't see leaving my kids after something like that, even to protect them. I could see not talking about it. I could see bagging it up and you know what? We're just gonna put it in the rear view. We're not gonna look at it anymore. It's in the past. But just bailing, I can't see that as being a good dad choice.
Well, I think they also shunned him quite a bit, except for Nell, because Nell wrote him a letter every month.
I get that.
So he wasn't,
but at the same time, he should have tried harder to keep some kind of connection with his kids, because it kind of felt like they could have kept the relationship up if they were welcoming of the relationship to many degrees, except Nell was more so than everybody else. I don't know. I just felt like more you could have done there, Pops.
I thought he felt like he was protecting them.
Well, I get that.
Well, Nell was very accepting of him. Luke was kind of a disaster the whole time. And then from there on up, you have Theo, Steve, and Shirley, who don't seem to trust what their dad's telling them. And then they seem to be upset to the idea that they never really got the truth.
But, and hey, I just want to stop you before you go any further. But one of those characters would absolutely be able to find out the truth in a matter of seconds. All Theo has to do is touch her dad, and she knows the truth.
Well, that may be that, and you may be absolutely true. However, Theo is somebody who's guarded to the point where she wants to wear gloves, so she doesn't want to touch her dad and find out the truth. With the exception of she still wants to be able to retain whatever it is that she has. So, I mean, I get what you're saying. However, if given enough time, weave my way through understanding why Theo never touched the dad.
Okay.
The thing is, though, is that those kids, they want a relationship with their dad, yeah, but they also insisted on having him tell them the truth, and that was something Hugh did not want to do until it was absolutely necessary.
And that to me is the fault of the character. Not the writing or anything, just the fault of the character. You cost Nell's life, in my opinion. He's a big factor as to why she died, because he never brought the kids back together. He never took that time to say, we need to get together. I'm going to explain this to you. We're going to go to Hill House together. We'll stand outside. You're going to know the truth just so you know for the future. You know, to basically help Luke realize he's not crazy and Nell realize she's not crazy. And, you know, all of these people realize that this is all true. This happened. And he didn't do that. And that's a failure on his part. On Hugh, the character, that's a failure on his part.
That's fair.
All right. Well, the next one we've got. And I agree with you. Boy, just seeing those two together, Henry Thomas and Timothy Hutton, I never thought they would be similar in any way, but they do kind of, in a way, look alike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the aging.
The head shape, eye placement, aging was just right.
But I was really bummed that when he cut his hand, at no point did he go, oh. Really disappointed. Wasted opportunity, Flanagan. Next time, make that happen. All right, if there's a season two or something, you'd go a different route.
Olivia, the mom. She's also one of the only, she's only family member who is the same actress throughout the entire show.
Yeah. Well, she's trapped in hell. Yeah. So.
Carla Gugino. She is, aside from being gorgeous, devilishly smart, and also a really kind mother and wife until she loses her mind. So with every moment, she does everything for her family. Even to her death, she feels she's doing the right thing for her family. And with that, they think it was a suicide. Of course, it turns out that she had lost her mind. It turns out that the house was playing tricks on her mind, showing her premonitions of her children's future deaths. She even saw them in the mirror and when she was doing all different sorts of things, mm-hmm. which made her... And I did love that they showed the impact of, from Steven's perspective, of her losing her mind in front of him and seeing that he couldn't see the ghosts in the mirror, the mm-hmm. future premonitions, but she did. And ghosts approaching her, telling her that it was all a dream and the only way to wake her and her children up was basically to kill them. You gotta die. You gotta die to wake up from this dream. Which is super messed up. She had to have been really deranged at this point to have accepted that because it's weird. She originally intended to leave and stay with her sister for a few days, but she actually goes to the same hotel room
that Nell's in,
that Nell was at, and where the father took them.
Right.
Which is crazy, and I have no idea what this hotel room means.
I don't know, but I bet Norman Bates is running it.
Yeah, right. she ends up coming back in the middle of the night to attempt to poison both the twins, Nell and Luke, and Abigail, who, as we mentioned before, we found out is a real human being.
Plot twist. It was real the whole time. I'm stupid.
And that is the Dudley's child, the one that survived.
Oh, that was a sad story.
It is a sad story. She tries to kill them with rat poison in the tea for their tea party inside of the Red Room, which is obviously pivotal to this story. Mm-hmm. Abigail is the only one who drinks the tea. Hugh gets to the kids in time to save them and prevent them from drinking it, but it was too late for Abigail. After he takes the kids away from Olivia to try to keep them safe and away from the house. Her ghosts are telling her that he's trying to take her kids away from her, and as she edges closer to the stairwell, the ghost gives her the final push, ending her life. She stays in that home because once you die in the home, you're locked in the home, apparently, unless you're the tall hat man, and attempts to reunite with her family in the afterlife. So even in her afterlife, she's trying to bring her family back together.
And that, before we move on to her, that's something I want an explanation on. Why can the Hat Man leave? Why can Bent Neck Lady leave, but Mom can't leave? That's the part I can't understand for the life of me.
Mom did leave.
No, because
she didn't really. She told him that. She didn't really.
That was always in his head. That was not her.
No, Mom was the one that was that broke the house, the model house. She came out from underneath the desk and she was crawling and she broke the model house.
Was that her?
That was her. And she was also in. No, that wasn't Nell. That was Mom.
Okay.
And she was also in the other slab, on the other slab in the mortuary at one point. She did leave.
I thought that was all just like a
hallucination.
Yeah, like a hallucination. I don't know.
We're talking about ghosts here. What do you even determine between a hallucination and a ghost?
It seemed to me if Mom could leave, she would appear to her kids and speak to them, or at least try to communicate with them in some way.
I think she would have.
Oh, yeah. Also, she tried to drag Luke in the grave.
What?
When Luke was throwing the dirt on Nell's grave, Mom jumped up and grabbed him by the wrist and tried to drag him in.
Yeah, but I didn't know if that was real or hallucination as well. But I guess you're right. It could have been the actual ghost. I kind of was on the...
It could have been the actual ghost.
Why would she... I don't know. That just, to me, it's strange that she would only come in those moments. To me, that feels like that wouldn't really be her. I don't know.
Well, she was obviously acting selfishly because she was lonely. So it's possible she was trying to lure her most sensitive kids back to the house.
She could have lured Hugh, though, that whole time because he had already pictured her next.
I guess Nell can leave the house. She leaves the house several times. All right. Well, that's beside it. All right, let's get back to Mom. That's just my tangent.
So Olivia tends to be the, I would say that she's a fairly complex character because you think that from the get-go that maybe it really was suicide and maybe she really did lose her mind based on Stephen's report. Just in like the first episode, that's how she's introduced.
I never thought that because I just assume it had to be the house because it was called the Haunting of Hill House.
Obviously. Yeah. But it's approached from the kid's standpoint that it's a suicide. And eventually they all start to understand that there's more to this story. Even Steven.
I just love seeing her episode play out.
You got that?
Her episode that played out where you see her, you know, throughout, is hers like 8 or 9, whatever episode hers was. As it builds in, you kind of see where she would kind of lose her mind, but also at the same time, like, well, is it really enough to make you kill yourself, though? And then she has her episode after you've already heard Mr. Dudley explaining how scattered the other lady was the longer they were in the house. And you start understanding, oh, that's why she cracked. I mean, it was more of a gradual process. It wasn't so slow as I thought it was, you know, because the time frame kind of seemed like it's all happening in a couple days and it's really over, 8 weeks or whatever it was. And yeah, she gradually loses her mind and it works better once you see the whole of it for her character.
I'm just reflecting on just Carla Gugino's acting in general. Like, she is so woefully undercast in things these days. Mm-hmm. She deserves every single accolade. She deserves to be in more things. She really is just amazing. And I feel bad for the idea that she just isn't in as much things. And I don't know why. Because she was phenomenal in this. She really was. She can go from motherly angel looking upon you to nightmare fiend in seconds, and it was just amazing to see that transition.
That's why I hope this will lead more people to Gerald's Game, because when you see that, I mean, she's chained to a bed for most of the movie, and yes, she's very attractive, but it's not that kind of movie. The whole movie hinders on her performance, and she's great. You know, she's just great. She's very underappreciated. Absolutely.
This room is like the heart of the house. No, not a heart, a stomach. It was your dance studio, Theo. It was my toy room. It was a reading room for Mom. The game room for Steve. A family room for Shirley. A treehouse.
No girls allowed.
But it was always the red room.
How do you take your tea?
Put on different faces so that we'd be still and quiet. While it digested. I'm like a small creature swallowed whole by a monster. And the monster feels my tiny little movements inside.
All right, final character, the house. Now we know what the house is. It's evil, but also weirdly welcoming in a way. It's a beautiful place where you can visit your loved ones for eternity, but for every good soul, there's an evil one trapped inside with them. What was that? The one that kept haunting Olivia? She was creepy as hell.
She was.
And psycho. The house.
Oh, Poppy.
Yeah. The house cannot be destroyed or all of those souls will be lost forever. But when is tormenting your family members, or when it is tormenting your family members, shouldn't you kill it anyway? That's kind of my question. But before I get there, the Red Room. We find out at the end of the series what the Red Room finally is. It is the room for everybody. There was no treehouse. There was no playroom. There was no dance studio. There was no reading room. There was only the Red Room sucking the life out of people. That was a cool twist. That was a really cool twist.
And it also gave them a piece of sanity. That was what helped them to maintain themselves. So they didn't.
Well, it was the thing that drew them into the house. It was the thing that gave them each their own private place, mm-hmm. where the house was able to take advantage of them.
It's great. That was really cool. So, do you guys think it was reasonable that Steven ultimately lets this place stay up at the end?
I get it. I understand it, especially when he gets it explained to him by his father. Oh, who happens to be dead at the moment. How do you argue with that? How do you argue with the idea that you just watched your dead father de-age and with it like in Disney style right in front of you and go hug your mother, who, I'll get to this later, has a weird look on her face, and your sister, who are both dead in the Red Room? I mean, if I were to see that and it was my family, and I would be like, well, I guess this is my life now. That's a good thing I'm making millions of dollars off of this stupid book, because now I got to take care of this shithole.
I feel the opposite, man. It's just like at some point, I believe you got to let things go, and they're basically trapped there forever. Is it really a good afterlife for anyone? If go bulldoze it, and I mean, I like that you can't light it on fire because the house is like, no, stop it. It's got its own fire marshal implanted in there somewhere. But go bulldoze it or whatever and get rid of it. Like, let those souls go wherever they need to go.
Be free.
Move on with your life. Everybody's life. You need to move on.
Yeah, but I think that's the thing about the whole story, though. If you destroy the house, you destroy everything in it.
You aren't who you are without your past. It's kind of an allegory there. Your past makes you who you are.
Maybe it is, but... But before we go start talking about allegories or symbolism or anything else like that, the simple point is that that everyone was making as far as the Watchmen and all those other guys, they were all basically saying, you destroy the house, you're killing those souls. Because those souls are trapped. Mm-hmm. They're not going anywhere. No house, no souls. I think they said the words, it doesn't belong to anybody.
I'm still getting rid of that house.
Yeah, it belongs to me. I pay taxes on it.
there's zero thing in there. Those people aren't the same. Their mind. I know, as one of the family members, that how much this house can torment and torture the people and the souls that are still stuck in there. I would not want my family to sit there so I can selfishly visit them. To me, that's similar to somebody who is on their deathbed. They're in a coma. They're never coming back, but you want to keep them on life support just so you can visit them, even though they're continuing their suffering. And that's mm-hmm. not within, let's say that their wishes were to just die. That's the same concept applied, but except for you can actually say hey to them. But they also have a demon evil spirit that's continuously trying to get them to do something that's not good or manipulates their mind and sends them into a crazed loop. Because even though she's dead, Olivia is not just hanging out in peace. She doesn't understand, but she still has to run away from these ghosts that are in there with her. That's not the life I want my family to live. And I certainly don't want another potential, like an opportunity for someone to, especially like kids, oh, let's go into this house that's been foreclosed on or nobody's visiting it or whatever. It's private. We're going to sneak into the house. And now those children are stuck in there. And now a new family is being tortured. It's just, there's not a benefit to me that I can foresee. I am tearing that place down. Bye bye. But one thing I do have a question for you guys on. Hugh reverts back in age. You guys mentioned that, where he goes back to his younger self, right? Mm-hmm. When he goes into the Red Room. Why did Nell not go back to her younger age? Isn't it like if you die at that age, then that's the age that you stay at? Because Carla never ages. Nell is in her adult form.
Maybe you go to your prettiest form.
Maybe.
Yeah, no, that's a good question, and I have zero answer for that, except for he goes back to Henry Thomas's form because that's the age when she died, maybe. I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
You're like, I want to be 24 again.
Maybe Olivia's like, no, I don't want the old guy. I want the guy who ran out of the house screaming like a bitch. I want that guy. Okay, it ended with Nell, Hugh, and Olivia all reunited, but the trapped in the house. Mrs. Dudley as well. The other kids escaped and went back to their lives, and Stephen is now the gatekeeper to the house's secret. Were you satisfied with the ending, or do you wish it had gone darker?
I liked that it was a happy ending. I certainly wish that the house would have just been completely destroyed, but I also respect that Stephen is now trying to do right by his father and listen to him and be the man of the family, per se. And I love that there was reunion.
There was reunion, and it feels so good.
There was reunion for family inside the house and reunion for family outside of the house.
I really appreciated the ending because after so much pain and hurt and sorrow and fear that was just running through my veins through most of it, it was nice to see it kind of end on a happy note. However, thinking of it from the point of view of, is it possible for them to make a sequel out of this? It's like, it feels like something that isn't going to last. It feels like something that's going to be robbed of us. So, I don't know. I like it for what it is, but what's going to happen? I think if they do have another season, then it will then impact how I feel about this.
I believe this is the end of the Crane story. If they have another one, it'll be like an anthology style. They'll tell another story of the house. They'll tell another one of the ghost stories. I mean, because there's so many ghosts, they could easily do that. There's a lot of stories that we never even got to hear about, so we could have that story. Or, maybe where it goes from there. I would like to see the same actors kind of – well, we'll talk about that in a second. I'm glad we had this because it's nice to have a dark show end on a positive note. I'm tired of cliffhangers. I'm tired of really dour endings. And, in fact, the alternate ending I wanted to mention, Mike Flanagan gave an interview with Thrillist, I think it was, where he explained what was almost his alternate ending. You guys ready to hear this?
I'm ready.
In the scene of the siblings where they're giving Luke a cake to mark the milestone for his being clean for 2 years or whatever, mm-hmm. Flanagan considered putting a small vertical window in the center of the wall behind the family instead of the paintings that ultimately appear in the frame. The infamous Red Room features a strange vertical window in the same spot. Uh-huh. It pops up again and again in Nell's toy room, Luke's treehouse, Theo's dance studio, Shirley's family room, Stephen's game room, and Olivia's reading nook. It's the biggest clue that although the room appears different to each Crane, it's actually been the same all along. So the illusion was they never made it out of the house. Mm-hmm. But he decided not to go with that because he wanted to give people an air of finality so that they could walk out of the series and be like, okay, I have a whole series done. I have this tale is told and it ended. Tragedy, there's definitely tragedy. Nell died and, there's a lot of tragedy that befalls the family, but also they're closer at the end. the remaining siblings. So it's a beautiful story and also a horrible story. I'm glad that they chose this way to go as opposed to that. That seems more by the numbers to me, the other way that they were thinking.
I still would be okay with either of them, but this one ended up really surprising me with happiness. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. However, one of the things that I keep on reminding myself of is that when Hugh walks into the room and gives Olivia and Nell a hug as young mm-hmm. Hugh, you have Olivia who is very like bright and filling the room up with, not Olivia, but Nell. You have Nell who's very bright and very welcoming and has this huge smile on her face to be hugging Hugh. And then you have Olivia who's deadpan staring at you.
Yeah. That was a little, she's not right still.
You're right. There's something there, and it will be interesting to see if they continue with this family's story. That one moment would probably be enough to build a whole nother series off of if they stick with these people.
Well, before we get to what we want to see, can we talk about episode 6 and how it was shot specifically? Because if I'm not mistaken, it was 5 total shots. A lot of people didn't realize why that one stood out. But a lot of other people realize that there are a lot of solid takes, that it's basically set up like a play almost. And many of the scenes go on for 10 minutes, 18 minutes, long shots. It's set up beautifully. So, Amanda, I know you got some background on this. You want to expand on that?
There were 5 takes that they did, and they had 3 in the funeral home and 2 in Hill House. And the reason that they wanted to do this so it could obviously impact, you know, emotions and everything. And it was just, this was their original sell to Netflix on the story was this.
Oh, episode. Was it really?
Yeah. So this was part of their pitch. So it's kind of like, we have to make this work.
We'll have one episode, which is episode 6, 2 Storms.
Yeah.
Where there's 5 shots, basically.
Yeah. That looks like one shot, one continuous shot. And how they did it is most of the camera choreography was actually included in the script, which would be a nightmare to read. Imagine like every pivot that they're reading mm-hmm. to go in between the dialogue. But they have the Hill House and the funeral home sets that were made with this particular episode in mind. They were built on adjacent stages, and there was a hallway that connected them. So that way Hugh could just easily walk through from Hill House into the funeral home. They had hiding places for the crew and equipment when it was made. They set that up with that in mind. There was actually an elevator that dropped from the ceiling, so that way the cameraman could come in and do his 360 shot.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
Yeah. So that came, and that was in the 4th shot that they did. They had rain effects, which actually they flooded the sets. And so that was a problem, obviously, because of all the rain.
Grab a squeegee. Come on.
Right? And they had all of this special lighting, not just for the set, but obviously like beauty lighting and everything they had to get in. And what surprised me the most, I guess I never realized how much effort goes into making a show, mm-hmm. is they started rehearsals on March 26th, and then they started shooting on April 6th. And I don't know how long, I don't know when it concluded. But I asked Mike Flanagan, and he did confirm with me that their days were 12-hour days, excluding the lunch. So at least between March 26th and April 6th, it's far beyond that because they have mm-hmm. their shooting days. They were working 12-hour days plus with their lunch.
Just to make this happen.
Just to make this one episode happen, which is insane. It's so much effort and so much work, and
it's worked for the show's benefit because a lot of people are talking about this particular episode, not just for the story, but just how it's shot, because it's such an intriguing way to shoot a television show.
Well, and it's super powerful too. It completely changes the dynamic. If they would have done, you know, where they're sequencing back and forth between people, I think that would have really taken away some of that impact, because this whole thing is just about getting reactions.
And being in the moment.
And you have to think about all of the kids, too, because we have the kid versions in these shots. So they would have to run the kids through. So while they were shooting on one set, then they would have the other one getting prepped for it, mm-hmm. and then they would have to swap really fast. I would be out of breath, first of all.
I watched some of the the YouTube clip of like a camera moving while they were shooting this and just seeing everybody run around and flip and switch things around. It was just fascinating to me. Absolutely fascinating.
And then the last thing I want to mention real quick is the episode was 53 minutes and 38 seconds. About 51 minutes is comprised of those five shots, which is insane.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Almost the entire episode is those five shots.
That's crazy. Now, let me ask you, Jem, because you're an artist by nature. Does that...
Which is kind of like being naughty by nature. Different.
Are you down with OPP? Yeah, you know me. Is the proper response would be to that question.
I know. I was letting you just like drop the joke and move forward.
As an artist, does that impress you in any way, like more so than us? Or I assume you would see it the same way.
No, I don't think it impresses me more. The impact or the fun of figuring out how they broke that all down has been interesting. But it really, I think anyone who appreciates plays or anyone who appreciates movies or just the technical aspects of what needs to be done to make this scene work, it should floor anybody. And it should be, or this whole episode does not get them an award. They're absolutely robbed because there was, I know Gandalf was probably involved. He had some hobbits running around doing stuff too. And it deserves every sort of accolade and attention that show is getting.
Yeah, I agree. All right, last question, then we can close this bitch out. What do you want to see if there is a season two, John?
God, I don't know. I can't even...
Or would you rather this just be done at this point?
I'm torn because I want to see more of their story, but I also acknowledge the fact that more of their story would be exhausting. I wouldn't mind seeing Poppy's story. Mm-hmm. Let's take it back a notch. Let's see what happened with Poppy, because what we're seeing old Poppy and young Poppy in that house. So there's two different versions of her terrorizing people.
Yeah, that could be fun. That could be a lot of fun. And she was a fun character too.
She was.
What about you, Amanda? What do you want to see?
I wouldn't mind seeing the story before this and how it led into the family. So then we could still get a glimpse of the original actors from this season, but also focusing on a different family. So the family that the Dudleys knew and like his mom, and see how that all panned out for them and get that full story, because there's obviously some scatteredness that happened. So I guess.
Oh, you know what? Seeing the other story from the Dudleys' point of view.
Oh, that can be really cool, right? I mean, you already have the actors cast. We have people we could follow. I would be interested in Poppy's story or the From the Dudley's Point of View story, or even an anthology story. See, the downside is if you go with the Dudley's story from their point of view, you're going to lose most of this cast. And I really like most of this cast. Too. So I would like them to come back in some form. You know, American Horror Story does this where they have an anthology format and it's just the same actors often recast in different roles. I would be fine with that. But in the same token, this is a very powerful emotional story. It would be kind of hard to not separate it. So,
yeah. And then the thing that would be happening is you'd have too many people going, well, this is just what America, now it's just turning into American Horror Story, which
I could see that.
I would much rather have Haunting be the standard and Horror Story has to live up to Haunting now versus Haunting trying to live up to Horror Story.
What I could see is showing some past story or a future story that involves the house or the Crane family is involved in some way. I could see that, but I'm kind of over the Crane story. I think it's been told. It was told very well. I don't need a chance of dampening that image with a second season. We could go to another Hill House story.
Honestly, I trust Mike Flanagan with whatever he wants to do.
I do too, but I think you're always rolling the dice when you extend stories like this. Do.
One last thing I want to bring up to you guys. Did you hear about the theory that this is the characters are built with the intention of focusing on each character having a stage of grief?
Or grief, yeah. Which are the stages? Do you remember?
So the stages, they...
Have they confirmed that's what's actually happening?
No, just theory.
Just some random theory.
Right.
But it also kind of works because you have...
It does, but it's also a stretch if you really read it. It's kind of... You're saying certain characters are certain, like... I can't remember which character it was, but one of them didn't fit at all to me.
Well,
Steven was denial. Luke was depression. Nell was acceptance. Shirley was anger.
Theo was bargaining.
I forget who Theo was. It doesn't fit pretty well. And if that is the case, then that's kind of disappointing because it's heavy handed. But I don't think it is either.
But it was interesting, and I could see them. You know, that's where they're at with their mother's death. Not with anything else, but particularly with their mom.
Yeah, I mean,
Santa and ghosts.
It's a fun theory. I don't agree with it at all. I see it as a well-told story.
It is.
I mean, that's just people looking for something,
but
I think.
But it was still fascinating.
It is fascinating, but I don't think Theo was bargaining in any way, shape, or form. That was the character. I'm like, that doesn't fit at all. So that's just trying to make, you know, a square peg fit in a round hole. It just doesn't work for me. But it's an interesting theory. It's creative, that's for sure. And this show is definitely creative. I will give it that. Final thoughts on The Haunting of Hill House before we close up shop for this special episode.
Well, if you listen to this episode and you haven't seen it, then you made a mistake.
We spoiled a lot.
The whole thing. There's a lot of scares, a lot of fun, a lot of
creepy moments. I loved it. It was amazing. All right,
last thing before we go. Favorite scary moment from the season. Do you have one?
Favorite or the one that scared me the most?
The one that scared you the most, what I would assume would be your favorite.
Well, no, it just took me by some damn surprise. In the car scene, and then the ghost shows up in between the two sisters, and they veer off the side of the road, and because the ghost like jumps between them and, and I was like, oh my God, I did not expect that. But the bent neck lady, like, that was
this
my...
This is where she does an honorable mention, John.
Sorry, all right, I'm done.
Yeah.
Okay, good job. John, what's your scariest moment from the series?
Well, because Amanda's already used all the words, let's just say the dumbwaiter scene.
Oh, that's a really good one.
That's a good one. Mine, the rocking horse. The scene where they're in their beds, they're sleeping, and the rocking horse is just rocking, and then one of them moves and it stops and it leans a little bit toward that bed, and then the other one moves around and then it leans a little bit toward that. I don't know why, but that was just I got chills up and down my spine.
Honestly, I think I need to rewatch that because I don't remember that much.
Do you remember what I'm talking about, John?
Yeah, I remember it. Somehow it doesn't stick in my head as much as some of the other things, but I do remember it. Like, there was that scene where you have the boy in the wheelchair just randomly rolling down the way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the top hat, was it the top hat guy that was doing the thump, 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 thump?
Yeah.
That was a good one too.
Oh, with Steven.
No, we're all doing honorable mentions. We're just all over the place.
When he was, right? he was like, just look at me. And the thing was like right next to his face. Do you know what I'm talking about? When they go back to the house at the end?
Yeah. That was when the top hat guy came in and...
I thought he was talking about the top hat guy when what's his face was hiding underneath the bed, because there's
right.
Oh
there's
no,
that,
no, yeah, that was
also the
that
top
was in the house. That was the top hat guy, and he was right there.
Yeah. And that was under the bed. But the moment where Steven, as an adult,
no, that wasn't under the bed. That was downstairs in the final episode where his dad is right there saying, "Look at me."
Yeah, that one was downstairs.
That was the top hat guy too.
Right.
I know. And I'm saying there was another one upstairs when Luke was hiding underneath his bed, and the top hat guy came up and was like.
That's what I just said.
I know. I was saying there was two moments, and I didn't know which one you were referring to.
Oh, okay.
This all just got convoluted for no reason.
I don't know where you're coming from, but I was talking about the kid moment. The kid was more terrifying. It's always more terrifying with kids than it is with the adults, I think.
It was just so – I could not keep my focus. If somebody told me to look at them and I knew that there was something that they needed – that they were trying to deviate my attention from, I'm looking at that thing.
Yeah, no, but you would be dead.
I would be. But also, why?
I don't know. Would he kill him?
I don't know.
Do you think if he looked at it, they would kill him? I don't know.
Possibly. Yeah. Like, that's
there's
the whole...
There's got to be a reason.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a reason. Hugh was like, look at me, dude. Don't look at it, because if you look at it... I mean, there's got to be a reason.
Yeah.
It's not, and actually, technically, because it's all in Hugh's peripheral vision, he's seeing what's going on. So, like, I'm pretty sure he had wet shorts at that moment.
I took that scene as dad protecting his son. He's saying, look at me.
I
don't think he thought he was going to die. Just, I don't want you to be terrified. Look at me. That's what I took it as. It's just, finally, he's being a real dad. because he abandoned his children for so many years, you savage. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. You can always subscribe in your podcast feed. I hope you guys listened to this and liked it and enjoyed it. Be sure to review us on iTunes, of course. That's what everybody says on every podcast. Go to thehollywoodoutsider.com. We've always got a new episode every single week in your podcast app. So thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you guys enjoyed The Haunting of Hill House. And be sure to come back next time. Remember, the next time you watch The Haunting of Hill House on your couch, buy some popcorn.
Bye.
And remember, it's all confetti.